It's very unusual stories, pastimes. I mean,
guys become women and stuff like that.
Yes, a lot of like violence and, you know, killing and just.
You're making observation and you're also asking a question. A lot of different cantos of the Bhagavatam, they have their different role to play. Of course, the main principle to keep in mind when reading any of the Bhagavatam is that the Bhagavatam, the 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, are basically a commentary on one verse. And when Rupa Goswami was writing the Nectar of Devotion, he was meditating on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see so many, and when you read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you'll see so many references to the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout.
Yes.
And so now if you take it the other way around, of course the Bhagavatam was written first, but you'll see that the Bhagavatam is actually a commentary on this verse, right, which explains Shuddha Bhakti or Uttam Bhakti, which is in the Mangalacharna of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the definition of pure bhakti. Anyavi lashita shunyam, jnana karma dhyanavritam, anukalyena krishnanu, shilam bhakti uttama. And it says that uttama bhakti, or pure devotion, is a cultivation of activities that are meant exclusively for the pleasure of Krishna. So this is the anukulya, means favorable or pleasure of Krishna. Anukulya Krishna. Then anushilanam. Anushilanam means one after the other. Anu, sequentially or following, one by one. Shilanam means cultivation. So cultivation of activities, acting one thing after another thing, after one activity after another activity, all for the pleasure of Krishna. In other words, it's the uninterrupted flow of service to Krishna performed through all the endeavors of body, mind, and speech, as well as through the expression of various spiritual sentiments, bhavas. These activities to please Krishna should not be covered by speculative knowledge aimed at impersonal liberation, jnana, or reward-seeking activity. In other words, we're looking for some karmic fall. Yoga or austerities. Such activities or service to Krishna is completely free from all desires other than the aspiration of bringing happiness to Krishna. So pure bhakti, in other words, some people say, oh, we should be free from all desires. Anya vilashita shunyam. Shunyam means devoid of, empty, free, zero, zed. Anya means other, abhilash, desire. So we should have no desires. Some devotees say, devotee has no desires. Devotee has no material desire. But we can have some desires. We must have some desires. The more we have these desires, the more serious we'll take up bhakti. We should desire to become pure. And we should desire to serve Krishna. And we should desire to develop prema. And we should desire to act in such a way that we can develop prema. So these are also desires. But they're all related to Krishna and to his pleasure ultimately. Because if we're pure, then we can perform better service. If we perform better service, then we can please Krishna. So this is Rupa Goswami, this is the best definition of pure devotion. So the Bhagavatam is actually 18 verses are explaining this verse. You should keep in mind whenever you're reading any canto of the Bhagavatam that the standard the Bhagavatam is trying to present is Uttam Bhakti. And where do you find Uttam Bhakti in the topmost way? In Braj Leela, the Gopikas, Gopika Prem, Radha Prem. Their devotion, their bhakti, therefore Krishna is Uttam, Param Uttam, Uttam Uttam. Because it is Mahabhav, it is the greatest, purest love. The coward boys have pure love, but Yashoda's love is more pure and more dedicated and more surrendered. But the gopis are most dedicated and most surrendered. So they're the topmost devotees. So everything is leading to that. So when you're explaining or defining something, there's two ways to define something. To give a full definition of something, you have to describe, this is what it is, and this is what it's not. And for example, someone says, I want to go buy a gold plate in the market. What is gold? So they get description, gold is like this. And then, but you must also describe what is not gold. Silver is not gold. Bell metal is not gold. Brass is many things look like gold or even act like gold, but they're not gold. So you have to know, otherwise you say, oh, you said gold was shiny. and it was yellow, and it was heavy. So I bought this gold plate costing 10,000 rupees. My friend, this is bell metal. You were cheated. This is only 500 rupees. Oh, but it's gold, and it's heavy, and it's, you know. So you have to know what is not gold and what is gold. So in order to, for Vyasa Muni and Shuka Muni Vyasadeva to present Uttam Bhakti in 10th canto, they have to present everything that's not. They have to show a Rupa Siddha Bhakti, Sangha Siddha Bhakti, Sarupa Siddha Bhakti. They have to show Karma Mishra Bhakti, Gyan Mishra Bhakti. They have to show all these type of bhaktis that aren't the thing. So that you'll know, is this Uttam Bhakti? Is this story of Dhruva Maharaj, is this Uttam Bhakti? Does this story meet the definition of Rupa's giving, Anyabhi Lachita Shunyam? No. And Dhruva wanted the kingdom. So he had desire. He desired the kingdom, so it's not Anyabhi Lachita. He's not free from desires. And he's not acting to please Krishna. It's Karma Mishra Bhakti. And then, what about Prahlad? That's later on, 7th canto. Is this Uttam Bhakti? No, it's some bhakti there, but it's Shantaras. It is bhakti mixed with Gyan. Prahlad's bhakti is called Gyan Mishra Bhakti. He was mostly a Gyani. He was knowledgeable. He gave so much nice preaching. Matirna Krishna Padarto Sotova. Nate Vidu Swartakadhemi Vishnam. He gave many nice, he understood the science. And he preached the science. And he did a little Sankirtan. But he wasn't in Braj Bhav. He wasn't in Braj Bhakti. Nowhere near. Nowhere near. So it's considered to be a type of Shanta. Shanti. Shanta Bhakti. Shanta Bhakti means Gyan Mishra Bhakti. So it's Mishra. It's mixed. It's not pure. It's covered with Gyan. Avritam. Avritam means covering. Gyana karma yad amritam. It says Gyana karmadi ana avritam. Means avritam, means free from covering. So this is a covering. Gyan is a covering. It's not pure. So then we come gradually different cantos and different stories. So ninth canto, all these different stories, you can see those kings, there's kings in this intrigue and this thing and that thing and this cursing and counter-cursing and murdering. Obviously that is not pure bhakti. There's so much karma mixed in there, karma mishra bhakti. And moreover, another thing we can say, so that keeping in mind the whole purpose of all the stories of Bhagavatam, the whole purpose of Bhagavatam is to describe what is pure bhakti and who are the pure bhaktas. And how can we be attracted to their bhakti and how can we follow in their footsteps? And that's Raghunuga Sadhana. To actually understand the pure bhakti of the Brijvasis, be attracted to it and desirous to follow them. And when that greed develops, genuine greed, then we can actually begin Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, following in his footsteps of the residents of Braj, Vrindavan. So this is the goal of Bhagavatam, is to bring us to this point of Raghunuga Sadhana, then Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, Braja Prema. So everything is leading up to that. So then you measure everything with that standard, every canto. So this is, you look at that ninth canto and you say, oh boy, there's a lot of mixture up here. It's almost like a replay of everything that's in the other canto. It's just shown, you know. And the other thing that comes to my mind when I think of this, what you were saying, is that in South India, when you go into these temples, the ancient temples, the Rameshwaram, Srirangam, and Tirupati Balaji and Shiv Kanchi and Vishnu Kanchi and all these temples that went all over there 1985, 1986. And part of the Shilpa Shastra scriptures describing temple design and architecture, there's philosophy mixed with art. Art, philosophy and culture rolled into one. So a temple design is not only artistic and purposeful, it serves its purpose and is artistic, but also it's philosophical. It's, of course, it's made according to Vastu. It's made in harmony with the principles of space and time and direction. Vastu. Vastu friendly, as we say. And very exact, according to Vastu, in terms of dig and dravya, direction and substances they use to make it and everything. But the philosophy is that in this design, you'll see, also in Konark, in the Surya Dev's temple, then the outside of the temple, the outside wall, and the outside Gopurams. Gopurams are like fancy entrance gates. And Srirangam, there's seven walls and seven gates, representing the seven gates of Vaikuntha. When you go into the, finally you have to go through seven walls, pass through seven walls and seven gates. So in the design, in the architecture, you find all these goddesses and gods, gods and goddesses, and they're all engaged in illicit activities mostly. They're having sex and mostly all kinds of sex. Looks like illustrated three-dimensional Kama Sutra, three-dimensional Kama Sutra and stone carvings, and every kind of thing going on there, man-woman stuff. And then there's some fighting, and you'll see hunters chasing deer and shooting arrows, and all kinds of things are there. So this is the philosophy is to say that this is on this side of the Karana Samudra, on this side of the causal ocean, you have these allurements, these distractions, kam, krodh, lobha, moha, matsara, mada, matsarya. This lust, anger, greed, envy, that all goes here. And the topmost thing is this lust, mituni. Yan maitanadi grihamedi sukamitusham. Pumsa sriya mituni bhavamitam. This pumsa sriya mitun. This sex combination, pumsa sriya between man and woman, this is the whole material world. This is the cause of the creation. Yoni and Linga, Shiva and Parvati. The cause of the creation and the maintenance of the creation is all going on due to sex desire. Sex is based on sex. So this is outside the temple. This is outside Vaikuntha. The temple where the Lord lives is Vaikuntha, Vaikuntha Dham. But you have to penetrate the seven walls, which are the seven coverings, and Sri Rangam, the seven walls. The seven coverings of this universe, which represent the kosh, the jiva kosh, the seven coverings of the body, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. But then these seven coverings, the subtle body is covered by these seven things. Lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, intoxication, right? That's six coverings. So these six coverings, illusion, moh. Kam, krodh, lobha, moh, mada, matsarya. That's like six, I think. Of course, the jiva. So these, when you see these things, then if you like that, a lot of people come and take pictures of all that and they don't even go in the temple. They say, oh, this looks much more exciting over here. Especially people go to Konark and they all that kind of stuff is over there in Orissa. And the foreigners, they really enjoy it. And they don't even bother. They say, why go in the temple? Everything's happening out here. Some stupid god there with four arms. And some god just standing there holding four arms looking so boring. And some lady sitting next to him with her hand like this. And they look totally bored to death. Standing stiff as boards. So the philosophy is that if you're still attentive to these things, interested in these things, attracted to these things, then you can't enter Braja Dham. You can't enter Vaikuntha Dham. You can't cross the causal ocean. You can't enter Paravyom, the transcendental sky, or as Prabhupada said, the spiritual sky. Spiritual sky incense company. You have to stay in a material sky, Janma Mritya Jaravyadi. So you're saying in the ninth canto there's all this killing and lust and men turning into women and King Sagar and this and that. I don't know. I can't remember. So many things are all...
names are so confused. So many names.
All kinds of dynasties and this and that and this dynasty and that dynasty. And it's just to show you that all these things basically are... It's kind of like if you're still interested in all this stuff, lust and anger and greed, it's like the outer walls of the temples. And all this pornography, then you don't have the qualification to enter the land of Uttam Bhakti. Because after the ninth canto comes, tenth canto. And tenth canto begins with the sweetness. It begins with sweetness, and then the sweetness gets a little diluted, and then it gets more diluted. So the sweetest thing is given first, just like Gujaratis. First, when Gujaratis have a meal, they eat the sweet first, if you know Gujaratis. And you give other people, they eat sweet last. And some people eat sweets first, middle, and last. Bengalis are like that. They eat any time. Well, first they'll eat the shukta. Shukta or bitter melon. And then they'll take it from there, you know. But, so this is the thing that to enter this sweet Braja Leela, then we have to wade through this ninth canto, which is kind of a refresher course on lust, anger, greed, envy. Lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, intoxication, all these things, and all kinds of names and parivars and all these different dynasties. And then he's finally saying, okay, you told me about all these things, now I want to hear about the Yadavas. I want to hear about Krishna. So then he starts off, Shukadeva goes right to it, because he could have started the other way around. He could have started Dwarka Leela. Because it's not that everything in the Bhagavatam is not chronology.
Yes.
It changes places, changes planets, changes yugas. So it's not always in chronological sequence. Even the 10th canto is not chronological. In Brajalila, things are out of sequence sometimes. So he started off with Brajalila, which is very sweet. So I think that's a reward. If you can make it through 9th canto. And also, Prabhupada said, if you... Because he said that's a qualification to read the 10th canto, is to read the other 9 cantos first.
Yes.
And he said, Prabhupada said, if you read the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam, you'll become God-realized. And God-realized means you'll become somewhat anartha-nivritti. And first anartha-nivritti, then artha-pravritti. Pravritti means acceptance, and nivritti means rejection. Or we say detachment. Nivritti means to let go, nivritti. Nivritti, but let go, to be detached, to reject. And pravritti means to accept, to embrace, to follow. So in order to accept the artha, the desirable goal, the art, artha pravritti, the desirable, the valuable thing, the wealthy thing, the valuable thing, the useful thing, to accept that artha pravritti, then first there must be anartha nivritti. Anartha, those things that are against, they're useless, worthless things must be rejected and left behind. So you read the 9th canto, 9 cantos, and become self-realized. In the 9th canto, you get a refresher course of lust, anger, greed, envy. Then you reject all those things. Anartha nivritti. Then you can do artha pravritti. Then you can accept the 10th canto. Then you're qualified and have the adhikar to accept Braj Bhakti in all its pristine glory and beauty and sweetness and charm. So this is the 9th canto. It serves its function to completely blast you off with a series of names and dynasties, and this one and that one, and Chavyam Rishi and that guy and this guy, and many, many interesting stories about poking guys' little worms' eyes out, and all kinds of anger and envy and envy of other living entities, uncontrolled senses. And so if you wade through all that and get those final lessons under your belt, then those are the final, that's your final exam. When you pass that final exam, then you get your certification that you're self-realized. Self-realized means that you're an artha nivritti. Then it becomes ruchi. Because as long as you have a taste for matter, you're not self-realized. You're body-realized. So body-realized means an artha nivritti. You realize I am the body and I like tasting the body. So this is an artha nivritti. So when you get ruchi for Krishna, then the sign of ruchi for Krishna is nadanana janana sundaram. You have no taste for this world. And so with that ruchi for Krishna, then you can taste the Bhagavat ruchi. You can taste it, the Bhagavad Ras of 10th canto. So 9th canto, we see all these things. Oh my God, look at all these things. No, I don't want this. Not neti neti. Not this, not this. I don't want this, I don't want that. This is not Uttam Bhakti. This is not Uttam Bhakti. This is not Uttam Bhakti. This is all Avilash. This is Anyavilashi Dapurnam. Not Shunyam. Avilashi Dapurnam. It's complete, full of so many other desires except pure bhakti. So now that that's out of the way, we're ready to find out, we're ready to be introduced to the Brijvasis, who really are the embodiments and exemplars of Anyabhilashita Shunyam. They are the perfect embodiments of Uttam Bhakti. Param Uttam Bhakti. Uttam Uttam Bhakti. Sridham Subal, Yashoda Maya, Nanda Baba, Lalita Vishaka Radharani. This is the land of Braj, the land of enchantment, the land of love.
I was getting so excited because I thought like 2 months before Janmashtami I would read the 10th canto. It's the 9th canto. It's like, God, you know, I started skipping some of the parts, like all the names, and I just started skipping. It was just getting too much. I still have like 300.
That's good if you have a lot of kids, you can pick out names.
Those names are so difficult, man. Very difficult names. Very, very.
Yeah, they all have meaning. In Vedic time, all the names are given on the basis of the chart. The Jyotishi is called in, and then they do the chart, then they do the Namkarna Samskara. There's Dasavita Samskara, there's 10 Samskaras for purifying the consciousness of the Jiva, beginning with insemination or Garbhadhan Samskara, and then throughout their life, from birth to death, from conception to death. There's 10 samskaras. So one's called Nam Samskara. Samskara. And this yajna creates this samskara creates purification impressions on the consciousness of that jiva. Purifies the jiva. Enables him to understand something of God. So Namkarana Sanskara, then the name is chosen on the basis of the chart. So the Jyotishi sees the chart and what are the qualities of this jiva and what are the possibilities of this jiva and the potential and what will this jiva attain in this life? What will his contribution be? His contribution to this world, what will he be? Will he be a statesman? Will he be a murderer? Will he be a king? Will he be a good man, a bad man? What will he actually be? So they were quite astute and quite an expert in predicting the future. It's called what's called predictive astrology in English. I forget the name in Sanskrit. Predictive astrology, Bhavishyahora or something like that. Bhavishyahora. There's Prashnahora, where you ask a question. Bhavishyahora, something like this. Predictive astrology. So then they would see about this lady or gent, this usually they're kings, all those people that mentioned in ninth canto are mostly kings and
yes.
Kings and their sons and their daughters or whatnot, princesses and kings, royalty, royal people, royal dynasties. There's no rickshawalas there. In the ninth canto you don't find any rickshawalas or pan salesmen in there. Mostly royal dynasties. Imam Rajashi Ovidu. No, Imam Rajashi or Rajan. You know, the parampara comes down through the kings and through the Brahmins, so that they're valuable. The kings and Brahmins are very valuable members of society. So if you look at those names, and then you'll see some, that's sort of very interesting names, because they're describing what that person will be when they grow up. For example, one child was born as a son of Abhimanyu and Uttara and Abhimanyu? No, I think so. Uttara and Abhimanyu. His name was Parikshit.
Yeah.
Uttara was Abhimanyu's wife. Uttara.
I'm not sure.
I think so, because Uttara had this boy and her woman. Ashwatthama tried to kill him. Abhimanyu was already killed in the battle of Kurukshetra. So Uttara is the mother of Parikshit. So when they did his chart, they said, oh, this boy, he saw God in the womb. So his whole life he'll be examining everyone. He'll be examining everyone to try to find someone that's like that person he saw in the womb. He'll be looking for God, examining everyone to see if they're godly or if they're God. So his whole life was like that, Parikshit. He was looking for God. And of course he found him when he met Sukadeva. Sukadeva showed him God in the Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is Bhagavad Darshan. Tattva Darshan. If you meet a Tattva Darshi, then he can give you Darshan of the truth. So Shukadeva Goswami is a Mahajan, Dvadasa Mahajan. Swayambhur, Narada, Shambhu, Pralada, Gujanaka, Bhishma, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Balir, Vayasaki, Vayam. So the Shukadeva, he is one of the great Dvadasa Mahajans, Swayambhur, Manu, Pralada, Bhishma, Janaka, Kumaras, Kapila, Muni, and Yamaraj. So Shukadeva, he showed Parikshit. Parikshit examined Shukadeva. He gave an examination. Shukadeva had to take an examination with Parikshit. And Parikshit administered an examination and he asked him so many questions. So many questions he asked Shukadeva. The whole Bhagavatam was a series of questions. What about this? What about that? Oh, how is it that Krishna is the Lord of religion and he comes to establish Dharma? How is he dancing with other men's wives in the dead of night? How is it possible, Shukadeva? And Shukadeva said, oh, you're asking me this question? I already answered that in the story of Shishupal. An even envious person, kama krodha lobhat, someone approaches Krishna out of lust or greed or envy or anger, they become purified and attain Krishna. So the gopis were not like that. It seemed like lust, but they were actually pure devotees. It was actually prema. So all of these questions were asked. Parikshit was asking questions, examining Shukadeva. Then finally he got to the 10th canto. And Parikshit said, please, can you tell me about Krishna? You've told me about all these dynasties in ninth canto. My head's also spinning. Your head is spinning. Nittai's head is spinning. You know, Shukadeva. Listen, Shukadeva, my head is spinning. Nittai's head is spinning. Too many names. Too many dynasties. Can't you just keep it simple? Tell me, I want to hear about one dynasty now. I just want to hear about the Yadus. I want to hear about the Yadavas. And especially in the Yadava dynasty, I want to hear about Sri Krishna. Reality, the beautiful. Oh, you want to hear about Sri Krishna? Oh, well, I was wondering when you would ask me that. So it was about 8,000 verses went by till they got to the 10th canto. The 10th canto is about 10,000 verses, whatever it is.
It's 10,000 verses, it's the 10th canto.
Something like that, 90 chapters. There's 90 chapters and 80, maybe it's 8,000 verses, something like that. It's 90 chapters and about 80 verses in each chapter. It's about 8,000, so. I just spoke the last 10,000 verses in hopes that you would ask me about Krishna. I've been beating around the bush. And now let me get to the point. The point is Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. So this is why he got the name Parikshit. As it aptly described the basic nature of his life. Or someone gets the name Duryodhan. It's not some allegory or some Aesop's fables or Lord of the Rings or something or War and Peace or some contemporary novel where people are given all kinds of funny names, funny fictitious names or sarcastic names. It's actually all based on Vedic law. Based on Vedic law and based on Lakshana and Guna and Karma. Guna and Karma of the individual, which is cast in time of chart is cast in birth and announced at the Namkarna Sanskara when the name is given. Oh, the chart is done of this one boy. Oh, this boy will be very strong and perform very, very great acts of strength. Therefore, his name should be Balaram. Right? This boy that we're naming here, he will actually bring two families together. He'll bring the family of Yashoda and Nanda together with the family of Vasudeva and Devaki. He will join these two families, bring them together. So he will join these families, so therefore he's Sankarshan. Karshan means to join. San means together. Karshan means to join or to attract. To attract, to join, to pull. Pull together, to attract. So this boy, when he grows up, he will pull these two families together and bring these together. So his name will be Sankarshan. And this boy will be a great source of joy for everyone. So his name will be Ram. So he has these three names, Balaram, Sankarshan, and Ram. So this is the science. So this is the Namkarana of Baladev. And then Krishna had his name. So Pariksha was duly named. So Duryodhan was given the name Duryodhan. He was only a baby. How do they know anything? Babies are only crying. But they say that this person will be a bad fighter. Dur means bad. And Yodhan means Yuda. Yuda means fighter. He'll be a bad fighter. He won't fight correctly. He'll try to kill children when they're sleeping. After the battle of Kurukshetra and everything was over, he came at night to kill the five Pandava sleeping sons. Or of course he did. No, Ashwadama, I think, did that.
Yes,
Ashwadama did that. But he was angered because Duryodhan's legs were broken. But Duryodhan was a bad fighter. You know, he didn't follow the codes of Kshatriya life. So, you know, he wanted Draupadi to sit on his thighs and burn down the house of Lak. You know, so many things. He tried to kill them and not the proper way of chivalry. Killing the enemy when they're sleeping, poisoning them, giving them poison cake, burning their house of Lak, and tying up Bhima. You know, so many. He was a dirty fighter. He played dirty. So he's Duryodhan. Right? So they're given. And Dhritarashtra. It means he's very firm or whatever. Firm in his lord, and Rastra means lordship or king, like Rastriya. And all these names, they have reasons like this. Well, astrologers can give some useful ideas to understand about our past, or they can also give some indication this may happen in the future, so we can prepare ourselves, or it might be hard times, or I may be very sick during these times, so I should take some vitamins or be careful of my health. And so knowledge is always useful. But the main limitation of astrology, it can become an avritam. It comes under the category of avritam. Karma, jnana karma, karmadi avritam, karmadi and avritam. Coverings of jnana and karma. So the coverings of astrological knowledge. Or the coverings of having more faith in homas and yagyas and devas, or having more faith And the karma itself means, astrology means your karma, it's just your karma fall. So to put more faith in the astrologer, that's the covering of Uttam Bhakti. If you put more faith in your astrology, in your astro chart, than you do in your guru, and you do in Krishna, then that's a covering. That's actually offensive. It's an offense to Bhakti Devi. Because Bhakti Devi is causeless. Bhakti Devi has nothing to do with matter. Bhakti Devi is not caused by anything material. It can't be limited by anything material, and can't be improved by anything material. Bhakti is totally transcendental. She's an amsha, an expansion of Radharani. So astrology can play its role to some extent, but it shouldn't supplant our faith in Krishna. Then it becomes an anartha. It becomes an obstacle to pure bhakti. So that's why we have to be careful. This verse should be our standard of measurement in all our activities. Anyavilashyashunyam. It's what we're doing mixed with material desires and mixed with karma, mixed with jnana. It's like, for example, if I don't do this pin ceremony or shrud ceremony, that I'll go to hell. That I was brought up. See, I was raised like this. We always kept fast on Monday. Okay, I'm a devotee. I took initiation, but our family got so many benefits from Shiva, and we've always, my father, my grandfather, my great grandfather, and this and that. We've always kept fast on Monday for Shiva. So at least I have to do that. And moreover, I'm afraid that if I don't keep this fast on Monday, Shiva will be angry. Then I may be in difficulty. So this means not pure bhakti, because it means your faith is diluted. Your faith in Krishna is not pure. You have bhakti. It's called shraddha bhas. There's shuddha shraddha and shraddha bhas. Bhakti bhas and shuddha bhakti. Karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, and shuddha bhakti. So this is called shraddha bhas. It means there's a semblance of shraddha. It's not pure shraddha. Pure faith, what is pure faith? Pure faith means saranagati. We study knowledge, we study the scriptures. We have some faith, and by associating with sadhus and studying scriptures, our faith increases. Faith in what? Faith in shastras. Shastriya shraddha. As our faith increases, what is the proof that we have faith in Krishna? That we surrender. That's the proof. If you don't surrender, your faith is lip service. So I've studied, so that means you haven't studied sufficiently, or you're too much sinful. Bhagaishwarya prasaktanam tayaparti shatesham. Krishna says, one is too much attached to sense gratification and material opulence, he can't be resolute in his determination to do bhakti, because he's too much sense gratification. Someone shouldn't be too detached or too attached. Should be a normal guy, middle road. So the end result of studying Shastra and associating with sadhus is we get Shraddha. Ado Shraddha. Faith. What kind of faith? First of all, faith in Shastras. We believe the Shastras. Shastriya Shraddha. And we believe what they say. And then the proof that we're actually realizing the Shastras and realizing the teaching and the Sambandha Gyan is that we surrender. What is surrender? Surrender has six symptoms. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjana rakshishya titi vishwasya gopchatre varanantata shadvirat sharanagati or sharanapati. So surrender, surrender to God has six symptoms. So the more we're doing these, the more we're surrendered. Accept things that are favorable for loving Krishna and pleasing Krishna and satisfying Krishna and rejecting things that are unfavorable. Krishna doesn't get any pleasure by us reading newspapers or news magazines, or watching news, or BBC. It's our pleasure, because we're attached to the world, we want to know something of the world. We're attached to our relatives, we want to communicate with them. So we're attached to the body, we want to read about other bodies. So this is maya. So this is not surrendered. So that means we're not much faith. As faith increases, surrender increases. As faith and surrender increases, conviction increases. As conviction increases, purity increases. As purity increases, attachment to Krishna increases. As attachment to Krishna increases, service increases. As service increases, love increases. When love increases completely, you go back to Krishna. It's all a matter of increase. Go Vardhan. Vardhan means to increase. And as you increase, it also means nourishment. As your senses are engaged more in Krishna's service, increasingly more and more, go means senses, then they become nourished. They become nourished with bhakti ras. As your senses become nourished with bhakti ras, go vardhan. Vardhan means nourished, go means senses. As your senses become nourished by increased service, then eventually they become saturated with devotion, love, prema. Yeah, but Bill Gates, let's take Bill Gates for example. We should never abandon logic. Naya also has its role to play in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is also common sense. Well, there is also the principle of achintya, shakti, inconceivability. You know, our logic will take us so far. We don't abandon logic, we employ logic. It will take us to the point of surrender. Surrender is logical. Surrender makes sense. So logic can bring us to the point of basic understanding of God and to surrender. Then our surrender and our faith will carry us further into the inconceivable region. Because what is inconceivable, what is infinite, can only be penetrated by faith and surrender. Because only by faith and surrender can the infinite be revealed to the finite. Because the finite has no power to understand the infinite with logic. Because it's beyond logic and beyond rationale, ultimately. Because we can't see God. So God has to reveal Himself to us. So this point about money and wealth and Lakshmi and soap and all this stuff. You take somebody like Bill Gates. Bill Gates is considered to have a few rupees. Most people say he has some money. And does he know anything about using soap on Thursday or not? So this statement doesn't make logic. It's illogical. If someone makes a statement, we must consider it if there's some logic behind it. Or rickshawalas, they don't use soap any day, including Thursday, but they don't have any money. So Lakshmi should be favoring them. They're not using soap on Thursday or any day. They don't have any money for soap. So they should be very wealthy because they're not using soap any day. Now, this is logic. It's called applying Naya. So things should be balanced to some extent. Because when you're talking about the material energy, then logic is very useful. When you're talking about spiritual energy, then logic has a place, but not the ultimate place. Because the ultimate place in spiritual understanding is Shraddha and Sharanagati, the double S's. The double S's will give you knowledge of Krishna. Yeah, the thing is, your husband was saying about don't use soap on Thursday, it's Lakshmi goes away, this and that, the other thing. But, you know, Lakshmi's not there to start with. You don't have any Lakshmi anyway. So what are you worried about her going away for? She hasn't come, so you don't have to worry about her going away.
Maybe he's worried that she'll never come if I'll use soap.
It's not like that. The thing is, you know.
But it is true, Maharaj, that on Ekadashi you should not share.
The thing is, there's so many yamas and niyamas. Hmm? And there's so many yamas and niyamas, you can get completely overwhelmed. So Lord Chaitanya said, and Shikshastakam, he said, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis Tatarpita Niyamata Smarane Nakala. Niyamata Smarane. There is no hard and fast rules, Niyam. There's no Yama Niyam for remembering the holy name, Nam Smaran. We can remember the holy name anytime and every time and all the time. Kirtini Sadahari Satatam Kirtiyantamam. So you'll see so many rules. Don't use soap on Thursday or Lakshmi Devi goes away. But she never came. As I mentioned your wife when you were gone, I said, you don't have her anyway, so what are you worried about it? If she hasn't come now, she's never going to come. Because people are born rich, people don't become rich. And if you're going to become rich, it's going to come whether you use soap or not. I don't accept this principle. The way you become rich is by doing punya in your last life. You do tremendous punya in your last life, and you become rich in this life. Whatever you do in this life, you get the fruits in your next life, in the material sphere. Materials in the spiritual sphere, you get fruits next life and also this life. And some material fruits you can get in this life also. You do some material activity. But generally, you harvest your investments in next life. So there's so many rules and regulations like this, but the main rule is always remember Krishna, never forget Him. Smartavya Satatam Vishnu. Smartavya Satatam Vishnu. Always remember Krishna, never forget Him. This is the main rule. This is total nectar devotion. What is the main, what's called Mukhya Niyam? What is the main rule? Or Mukhya Vidhi? It's called the Mukhya Vidhi. Mukhya Vidhi. The main rule is always remember Krishna and never forget Him. And all these other 64 limbs of devotion, there's some do's in the 64 limbs of devotion, some don'ts. Don't wear shoes in a temple. Don't do this. Don't touch a woman during menstrual period. These are the 64 rules of devotion. They're there in the nectar of devotion. Don't touch a woman during menstrual period. Okay, every month for 5 days, I don't touch my wife. That's what it says. If you do, it's an offense. It's an offense to bhakti. So there are do's and don'ts. So these are supplementary to the main rule. The main rule is to always remember Krishna. If you're following the other rules and not remembering Krishna, then you failed. So there are many, many rules in Karmakanda. This rule about Lakshmi and soap, that's all Karmakanda. Many rules in Jnanakanda, many rules in Yogakanda. And in Bhakti, there's also many rules. There's a book of rules called Hari Bhakti Vilas. That was ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami, they compiled it. Gopal Bhatta Goswami did all the research because he was a Pakka Brahman from South India, a Srirangam Brahman, well versed in educated throughout his whole life in all of the yamas and niyamas of Vaishnavism. So he gave the scriptural support and advice, and Sanatana Goswami wrote it and selected what was appropriate. But even that is quite burdensome for today's times. It says in there, when you go to pass urine, you should wash your hands 15 times with clay, 10 times with sand, 3 times with water, 5 times with soap, 16 times with cow dung, 14 times with Dettol, 17 times with phenol, and then if there's any time left, then chant japa. Try to finish 16 rounds. So this is there, and people maybe did that 500 years ago because they didn't have any Lux soap or all this other stuff, running water and all these things. So you have to apply these things according to time, place and circumstance. But for us, we have to follow the rules of devotion, because our principles are this. What we follow the rules and regulations which will make us clean and suitable to please Krishna, to serve Krishna and please Krishna, because this is the reason for all our rules. Lakshmi or no Lakshmi or this or that, we don't really care. We care about pleasing Krishna. We care about making Krishna happy and satisfying him and doing what's ever favorable for his pleasure and satisfaction. That's prema, that's love, that's bhakti. So we have some rules, not many rules, but minimal rules. When you wake up, you brush your teeth and clean your tongue. Why? Because when you do puja, if you don't brush your teeth and clean your tongue, then you'll smell. But you read an Ekadasi book, which has so much karmakanda import to it, you'll say, oh, this Ekadasi, don't brush your teeth. Some Ekadasi says don't brush your teeth. So now, will that be pleasing to Krishna when you come to front of the deities with all your bad breath? No. So you have to understand. That's why you can't understand Shastra without Guru. You can't understand anything without teacher. You get some vague understanding, but if you have a teacher, you get a more clear understanding and more precise and much easier. Like you can get a cookbook and try to figure your way out through cooking. If you have a teacher, you'll learn a lot faster. And you learn a lot, you learn much better. So that's the idea of having guru. So there are minimal rules and regulations which we follow, but the common denominator, we're following these rules so these rules and regulations will assist us in the primary rule, in the Mukhya Vidhan or Mukhya Vidhi. Mukhya Vidhi is all these subsidiary rules are simply to facilitate the main rule, which is always remember Krishna and never forget him. So not using soap on Thursday has nothing to do with pleasing Krishna. It's not favorable to Krishna. Matter of fact, when you come in front of Krishna, Krishna will say, P-U, you stink. Get lost. So then what? So whose favor do you want, Lakshmi or Krishna? Krishna is known as Lakshmi Nath. If you have Krishna, automatically you have Lakshmi. Shakti, Shakti, Matura, Beda. Shakti, Shakti, Matura, Bheda. They're not different. They're not separated. Abhed. There's no Bhed. There's no difference. If you have Shakti, you have Shaktiman. If you have light, you have fire. If you have sun, you have sunlight. If you have Shakti, you have Shakti. If you have Krishna, you have Radha. If you have Lakshminath, you have Lakshmi. So if we're trying to please Krishna, then Lakshmi won't be pleased. Lakshmi Sahasra Sada Sambrahma Sevya Manam. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamam Bhajami. Krishna is being surrounded by thousands and thousands of Lakshmis, Lord Brahma is telling. Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevya Manam Govinda Madhi Purushantam Aham Bhajami. What's that whole verse? How's it go? Advaita Machuta Manada Manata Manadyampara Anata Rupam Adyampara Lakshmi Shastra. So it's in Lakshmi Sahasra. Hundreds and hundreds of Lakshmi Devis are surrounding Govinda, doing puja and worshipping him and praying to get his darshan and praying for the dust of his feet, praying for his darshan and rasalila. Lakshmi's in Belvan doing austerities. And that's the Krishna, the Vrindavan Krishna we're trying to please. That's our Krishna. So why do we care? Why do we worry? Yeah. If we have Krishna, if you have Krishna and you have no money, are you happy? Yes. Because Krishna is just, he's Ananda Sagar. He's an ocean of happiness. Krishna. Krishna Ananda Sagar. Krishna Ananda. Krishna Karshati Ananda. He attracts everyone and everything and binds them with his love and his bliss. So if you have Krishna, you'll be attracted. You'll be blissful and bound with love. So you have no money, but if you have Krishna, you're rich. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by Ramananda, who is a wealthy man? And Ramananda Sambhag, he said, a wealthy man is he who has prema. Radha and Krishna prema, he is a wealthy man. So that's the wealth we want. Because that wealth will bring peace, that wealth will bring fulfillment, that wealth will bring satisfaction, that wealth will bring eternal life in Brajadam. But you can have all the money in the world and not be happy. You can have all the money in the world and not be peaceful. You can have all the money in the world and become a cockroach in your next life. Gaur Hari Bo, Gaur Hari Bo, Gaur Hari Bo. So we should follow, we have our deity book, which is quite nice. There's two books, orange color books. I don't know what position they're in now. They're called Punch of Pradeep or something like that. You saw them? Deity worship books, right?
There's one that Mukunda Prabhu.
No, that's just for the pujaris in Krishnavaram temple. That's quite scanty. But there are two volumes, were very nice. They were published, I don't know, maybe they have them here and there. Published by GBC, official books. It's the official deity worship standard for temples. And of course that's a modified, adapted version for the specific Vrindavan temple by the head pujari.
Yeah.
So the Bajaris have some idea how to, what their standard is here. But all the different niyams, nitya kriya and brushing teeth and all these things, washing and all the things you're talking about for the pleasure of Krishna, for devotees, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, are explained in there very nicely in two volumes. It's called Pancha Pradeep or something like that. Pancha Pradeep, something. We've had orange cover with cloth cover of two volumes, and it's a complete, it's a summary of the Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's really well done. So that's sufficient. We don't need any more rules and regulations than this. And as I mentioned, the main rule is Smartavya Satadam Krishnam, or Smartavya Satadam Vishnu. Always remember Vishnu or Krishna by chanting his holy name. That's the best yama and niyama. Whether you're clean or unclean, pure or impure, whether you're sleeping or awake, you're eating or you're walking, or you're in the toilet or you're in the shower, chant Hare Krishna. That's the best. Then you'll be rich. Really rich. You meet people that have millions of dollars and they say, I would give anything for peace of mind. If you can give me peace of mind, I'll give you $1 million. And then the yogi, the teacher, the guru will say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Only you can do that. Peace of mind must be self-acquired. It cannot be purchased at any cost. But a devotee is peaceful. Bhaktaram yagatapasam sarvalokamaheshram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatva mam shantam richati. This is the peace formula in Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, verse 29. This is how to be peaceful. You want to be peaceful? It doesn't take any money, it doesn't take any education, it doesn't take good family, good birth, Achi Gotra, Bariya Gotra. It doesn't take Indian birth, any birth. It simply takes recognition and acceptance. Recognition, acceptance, submission. Accept and recognize that Krishna is the enjoyer, Bhaktaram, Yagatapasam, and he's the enjoyer and he's the controller. Suridam, and he's a friend of everyone, and he's the object of everyone's love and devotion and service. If we can accept these things, then not only will we be peaceful, but we'll be joyful. Not only joyful, but blissful. It doesn't cost a dime. It doesn't cost a rupee. Well, it does cost something also. Yeah, yeah. You have to sacrifice yourself. You have to give your Atma. Atma Samarpan. Sama Arpan. Sama means completely, all. And Arpan means worship or offering. Samarpan. Man Tan Dan Guru Samarpan. Man Tan Dan Krishna Samarpan. So if you give Atma Samarpan, you cover everything. Because Atma means body, Atma means mind, Atma means soul. Body, mind, soul, everything for Krishna, everything for Guru. This is pure devotion. Sarva Parivanir Muktam Tat Partuena Nirmalam Rishikesha Rishikena Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uttama. This is the same verse that this is a slightly not as complete definition of pure bhakti that Rupa Goswami gave in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, verse 11, first wave, first chapter, verse 11. But this predecessor verse, which appeared millions of years ago in Narada Pancharatra, has the same concept, because Bhakta Narad, he's a Bhakta avatar, spreading bhakti all around the world. So he also gave the basic definition of bhakti by saying it's free from all upadis, free from all kinds of material designations and all desires. The sarva upadi designation also means desire, because as soon as you have a designation, then you get a desire. You say I'm man, then you desire a woman. You say I'm woman, then you desire a man. As soon as there's a designation, then desire comes with it. Sarvapati Vinir Muktam, be completely free from these things. The only desire you can have is to render service to Radha and Krishna. Tat Paratvena. And Tat Paratvena means pleasing. We should give up all desires and designations and upadis and be free from all that and only have a desire to serve Krishna. But not only that, it should be pleasing to them. And Nirmal, uncontaminated by Jnana and Karma. And Rishikena Rishikesha. The spiritualized senses. Rishika Isha. Rishika means senses, Nisha means Ishvara Parama Krishna, the controller of the senses. Rishikesha Sevanam, Bhakti Uchate. This is called pure devotional service. Engaging our senses in the service of Krishna. So these are verses that describe sadhana bhakti. Pure bhakti. Radhisham. So bhakti, or pure devotional service, means, what does it mean? It means engaging all of one's senses and mind in the service of Krishna with the sole purpose of pleasing Him. It's not enough just to serve someone, because we say it's not what you do that counts, it's how you do it. Like you may serve out food in a restaurant. Here, take this, take this, take this. What is that? So you're serving the food. The person's getting the food, they're paying the money, they're eating. But are they very pleased by the service? Maybe, maybe not. If you're a very pleasing and loving and kind type of person, waitress or waiter, then they may be somewhat pleased by it. But what are they pleased by? The food? Partially, but moreover by your attitude. By the way you served it. Your smile, your movements, your tenderness, your concern, your care. You're watching my plate, and as soon as the subject was almost finished, you run, oh, take some more. Oh, take another chapati. You're very attentive. You're very attentive. You're very attentive. You're very careful. You're very kind. You're very loving. Very sweet. Very gentle. So these are the qualities of a devotee in his service. He's very attentive in his service to Krishna. He's very careful. He's very gentle. He's very loving. He's very kind. So this is the idea of anukulya. Krishna anukulya. Anukulyena. Pleasing Krishna, anukulya. Anu means same. Kulya means family, same mood. My heart is your heart is my heart. Your mind is my mind. Your desire is my desire. Your feelings are my feelings. This is bhakti. So therefore, this is what it means. The sole purpose of pleasing Him. One thing is engaging. Okay, I'm in the temple. My senses and mind are engaged. I'm thinking about Krishna, Hare Krishna, and I'm washing the floor. But let me out of here. I'm only washing the floor to get breakfast. I'm only going to Mangalarti to get breakfast. And I'm only washing the floor to get lunch. And I'm only going out on Harinam to get dinner. In the afternoon we go out on Harinam. I'm only doing that so I get something to eat tonight when I come back. Get some puff rice and hot milk and a little ma. But is this action I'm doing for the sole pleasure of Krishna? Or is there calculation? Is there meanness in it? meanness or meanness, me calculation. What's in it for me? What do I get out of this? What benefit is there for me? This is the usual calculation. Meanness. I, me, and mine. Ahamameti. This is the result of combining with woman and man. Janasya moho yam ahamameti. This concept is already there, and every man, every woman has a concept of aham and mamta. Me and mine. I and mine. Aham and mamta. But then that's already there. All about me and all about mine. Me. Oh, there's somebody else? Oh, yeah, okay. Me and my mother. Me and my father. Me and my brother. Okay, me and mine. I and mine. So that's already there. But then when man and woman combine, then it becomes big time. Big time. Big time, me and mine. I and mine. My husband. My wife. My house. The husband is thinking, my house. And the wife is thinking, my house. And neither one of them are thinking, our house. And definitely no one is thinking, it's Krishna's house. Because it is Krishna's house. And nobody else's house. But that may take a few thousand lifetimes to realize, if you're lucky. Pumsastriyamatuni bhavametam tayoramito ridya grantamahu ato griha shecha sutapta vitair janasya mohoya mahammameti. So the attraction between male and female is a basic principle of material existence, and this misconception shackles the jiva to material illusions. On the basis of this illusory attraction, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes intensely attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and develops the false mentality. Develops, he already has it, now it's developing. Gets a PhD now. Now he develops a false mentality of I and mine. Before we only had you only had a BS in I and mine. And now you get a PhD in Ahamameti. Janasya moho yamahamameti pumsastriya mituni bhavametam tayor mito riya grantamahu ato kriha shetra sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamahamameti. It's nice. Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam nayam deho deha vajrani loke kashtan kaman arhate vidbujam ye tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam shudyed yashmad brahmasukyam twanantam. Do you want brahmasuk? Twanantam, no end. You want endless happiness, endless joy. Then you must perform divine austerities. Tapo divyam puchakayena sattvam. Then you become sattvam shudyed. You become sattvic, pure, peaceful, shud. Sattva shudyed. Then, but otherwise you have another choice. You can also go the other way. Like the pig eating, still eating pigs, right? Dogs and hogs. Kashtan kaman aharte. Boys, listen, boys. You have this human body, the deha, sharir. But everyone else, so many dehas are there. There's dog deha. There's pig deha, kuta deha, sewer deha. And they also have bodies. And they're also working hard. Don't work hard like asses. Work hard like an ass and dog and simply eat stool. Don't be like that. Don't do like this. Work hard, work hard in tapa. Tapasya. One should engage, my dear boys, in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service, shuddha sattva. Sattva shuddha means shuddha sattva, pure goodness, sarup shakti. Because when one performs devotional austerities, then he attains shuddha sattva. Shuddha sattva means contact with sarup shakti. Sarup shakti brings shuddha nam. Shuddha nam reveals our shuddha deha, our siddha deha, our pure spiritual body, our sarup. And then we can really engage in Krishna's service. That's the divine position of devotional service. Saktvam shudyad yasmat brahma sokyam tvanantam. Saktvam shudyad means shuddha sattva, pure transcendental goodness. Goodness mixed with sarup shakti. Nadini shakti and samvit. This is transcendental knowledge, divyagan, devi shakti. Mahatmanas tamam parta devim prakriti mashrita. Now devi prakriti is Radharani, Nadini shakti. The bliss potency, the love potency, this is shuddha sattva. So then you can really, that's the divine position of pure devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and one attains this position. He attains eternal bliss for life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. Endless bliss. Bliss eternal. Love divine.